Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Like Your Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub, as usual. Are you the one, Seth?
I'm good.
Awesome. All right, so this week, not as much news as last week, of course, with the earnings, but we have some residual news from the earnings and then the week build up over that, basically. But the first thing we want to talk about this week is something that we've touched on a few times before, but now that the Porsche Taycan is getting to the wild, there's even more comparison with the Tesla Model S. And some publications are even getting their hands on both Model S performance and a Porsche Taycan Turbo S and putting them together in real-world tests. So earlier this week, we reported on a German magazine that did one of those tests. It was nice and everything, but there was a few suspicious things about it in terms of the drag race that was much slower for the Model S than advertised by Tesla, and also things that we know from just real world experience with the car. And a bunch of people had managed to do the 2.4 0 to 60 that Tesla advertised. And also you need to consider the fact that they did the whole test on wet pavement, basically. The weather wasn't good. Now, Top Gear, which of course has a long history with testing Tesla vehicles, they did one of the first seemingly good tests of the Tesla Model S Raven. Oh yeah, that's another thing. The German magazine also pinned the Turbo S versus the Model S performance without the new Raven powertrain and suspension upgrade and everything. So an older, basically a Model S P100D, not a performance S Raven. Technically, they only called it the Model S Performance, but they did call it that before the Raven upgrade, so whatever. Anyway, Top Gear did the test with a brand new Model S Performance with the Raven upgrade and the Turbo S for the Taycan. So top of the line for each car. And we reported on the review earlier this week when it came out, and we said it was mostly a fair review, at least fairer than the German magazine review. And the conclusion was that both cars are great, which we also agree with, and that they're not necessarily for the same people, of course. First of all, the Taycan is much more expensive. Not that someone that buys a Model S Raven, which is what, $140,000 or something like that? Close to that, right?
Yeah, it's about $145,000.
Yeah, so if you can buy $145,000 cars, normally you cannot buy a $175,000 car. The thing with the Porsche is that they like their option at Porsche, so you can get it up there pretty quick too. But anyway, still with Top Gear, the drag race test was still a little bit suspicious. We noted last week, earlier this week when we posted the review, and they're getting 2.6 seconds 0 to 60 time, which of course is a little bit slower, and the quarter mile is also a little bit slower. Though the quarter mile, we knew that Porsche had an advantage. It could probably beat the Tesla Model S with the longer distance. It's just a quarter mile, but a longer drag race than just 0 to 60 due to the fact that it's a two-gear electric car, which is a big advantage if you want to hit higher speed. So we knew that there's a chance that the Taycan would come in at a quarter mile, had a higher speed, and probably a little bit quicker than the Model S. But there was a big difference on the Top Gear review. It came in at, I have it here, 10.69 versus 11.08.
You know what's interesting about the second gear in the Porsche Taycan is that it doesn't even come in until 65 or something like 60 miles per hour.
Yeah.
So like on a typical day of driving, if you're staying under the speed limit, which in a Porsche you're probably not doing much of, but you would never even engage the second gear if you're driving the speed limit in normal circumstances. So that gear is particularly made almost exclusively for racing, and it kind of shows where Porsche's priorities are.
Racing and arguably also like Autobahn driving.
Right, right, right. It's
because that's German. A big part of their market. Obviously, it's a German company. But yeah, that's fair. So we noted at the time, trying to come up with basically an explanation why they came up with those performance results. And we noted that while they did show the driver in the Porsche sitting on the launch control for the Taycan, they didn't do that with the Model S. And you need that in the Model S in order to unlock the full peak power output. And so we noted that that's a possibility. And later on, our friends at Drag Times, Brox at Drag Times, a popular YouTube channel that specializes in, you guessed it, drag races. And they have a Model S, and they actually had, I think they had all different, all versions of the Performance Model S dating back when it came out in 2014, the first Performance Model S, I think. No, that's not true. Technically, 2012 P85 right. is a P85, is a P for performance. So, but I mean the dual motor, when the dual motor came out, that's where the channel picked up, and all because that's when the Model S started beating everything on the drag race, on the drag track. Anyway, they came out with a similar analysis that most likely they didn't use the launch mode, and they even said it probably was in range mode and not in ludicrous mode. So since then, Top Gear has come out and confirmed that, basically confirmed they indeed didn't use launch mode, but they did say that they were on ludicrous mode. So that's still not the highest power output that you can get out of the car.
So the two things, like the range mode, like there was actually a screenshot of the, like when they were doing the launches, and who knows if that's the one that they actually timed, but that one of the viewers said, hey, you know, screenshotted the thing, you're in range mode, and like range mode is really low power. Actually kind of surprised that it would even hit under 3 seconds.
But I don't think that was what they used during the race. And here's the thing too, they also didn't use the time achieve in the drag race, because you can actually see the drag race in the review, and you can see the Porsche Taycan pulling ahead by like, I don't know, one car length or something like that. But they said that they used the time that they obtained in a previous review of the Model S because, what did they say? It was a faster time. So they knew that a faster time was achievable. So they compared it based on those times. Okay. But, It is kind of weird, especially if you know the history of Top Gear. I mean, I don't think it's fair to say that exactly, because of course Top Gear today is not Top Gear 2008, was it?
When they
do the whole Roadster saga thing?
Jeremy Clarkson was kind of running the show then, and he's a little bit of a petrol guy, and also just kind of a douchebag. But in subsequent videos, he's clearly shown that he doesn't like electric vehicles at all, and that he was going to trash Tesla is no surprise.
Yeah, what happened, if you guys don't know, is that they did a review of the it was a Roadster back then, the original Roadster, and they showed it running out of power on the track. And Tesla actually looked at the data logs of the car, and they said that, no, we never ran out of power on the track. We can actually look at it. And even if you did, we had a second car ready to go. So you didn't have like to push the car, and that they showed like them pushing the car around, which was, of course, a dramatization. And, when a Tesla employee delivered the car, he saw that was written into a scenario, into a script that it was delivered to them before that. So they knew they were going to do that, showing them losing power before they ever lost power. And actually they weren't going to lose power. So Tesla was like, decided to sue them over that, because of course that was awful publicity back then. And, especially in 2008, where electric vehicles are just starting the second wave after the original car wave of late 90s, early 2000. And people were all, still today, there's some of us still skeptical about EVs, but back then it was even bigger. But Top Gear ended up winning the lawsuit because their argument was that they were just an entertainment show. They don't require any type of actual journalism and showing the facts, so they could show whatever they want. I don't know if that's still the case today, if they can still do that argument today, because they're still doing similar things. I mean, it's not as bad, obviously, because we noted that the review, aside from that, was pretty fair. They seem to like both cars, equally to a degree, the host did say at one point that he would buy the Taken over the Model S. But
So I kind of have like an opinion of this. All of the German, or in this case Top Gear, early reviews of putting the Taycan versus the Tesla Model S seem to be kind of favoring the Taycan, and I feel like Porsche's being, you know, we have no evidence and whatever, it's just speculation here. Porsche's being very selective with who they let have their vehicle, and they can kind of say at this point because they have
They haven't given us one yet.
Yeah, it's weird. We haven't even gotten a drive yet. It's weird.
And they're lying to me about it too.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, they lied to me because I keep hitting them up about them. And they were like, we don't even have press drive lined up. And then whoop, the next day I see a bunch of people in cars. I'm like, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I know. There are special kind of folks over there at the PR department.
And it's weird because we like the Taycan. We've been clear about that. Every time we do like the car. Sure, we don't think it compares favorably with the Model S and a bunch of things. But I mean, I'm going as far as saying that I prefer the design of the Taycan to the Model S. And you know, my main issue with it is okay, the range is not as good. But again, 200 miles is plenty for a lot of people. Supercharger network is more convenient than whatever you're going to have to use with the Porsche, which is basically Electrify America in US and Ionity in Europe. And the UI, user interface, I prefer them, Tesla, to anything else. But other than that, I love the car.
Yeah, it's a very good car. Like, it's very Porsche. Like, you're not buying, I mean, I guess a Panamera is kind of a family car. But for the most part, you're not buying a family car. Whereas the Tesla is kind of aimed at, like, you want to go really fast, but you also maybe have three kids or something. Anyway, like, the larger point is that Porsche's PR department can go out and say, hey, Top Gear, we really want to see the Porsche beat the Tesla Model S. Is that something you guys can do? And if they say, yes, we'll do that, then they have one. And if they don't say that,
that's the case.
But I mean, two different publications have both kind of like, okay, so going back to the Tesla Model S speed, we know like there's 100 V-Box Tesla Model S P100Ds, ludicrous.
2.4.
Yeah, going 2.4 seconds and under. Like, it's a like documented fact that that car can go that speed. You know, some weird things might have happened that day, but, you know, going from 2.4 to 2.8 seconds, that's pretty shady. Mm-hmm. So something happened, I think. And, you know, clearly Top Gear is not doing their homework. Like, give a Taycan to drag times. Like, that would be like
for me. And you know what's going to happen if you do that? I mean, they're gonna do a race with it, and that's it. Like, because they're actually about racing. They're not about like, all right, let's give you what the best we can get with this, guess with this, and then let's compare them on paper. It's just gonna do a race with it, and then release the number and try to make that race as fair as possible. But anyway, we can talk about that forever. At the end of the day, it's a good thing because it's more competition for EVs. And to be fair, Tesla never needed that competition that much to improve their car. They were always working on that even before they were any kind of, if anything, I would call it Taycan close competition. So if any kind of close competition, Tesla was still working to improving the car. But since the Taycan came out, you've hear Elon Musk referencing the car quite a few times, like the whole Nürburgring thing to try to beat the time there. And now this came out and Elon Musk right away comments saying that, well, first of all, he comments said that he agreed with drag times analysis of it. So he says that it's basically not fair. The Top Gear review wasn't fair. That's what he's basically saying. But then he comes up and says that confirmed that the Model S is going to get the peak power output improvement by 50 horsepower, which is basically what he said last week at the earnings call, but not exactly in those words. He said like a 5% increase. Now he confirmed it's going to be 5% horsepower increase through a software update that sets you to the improved motor control optimization that they did on the car. We don't
50%. 50 horsepower is more than 5%, isn't it? Like, it's not 1,000 horsepower to start with.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe it's a little bit more for the P100s or something.
Yeah, for the performance Raven one. Yeah, but that's great. That's good. And then he said that, that's again to my point about, pushing the performance. He said that the thing that now the Model S Raven is going to be able to beat the Porsche Taycan Turbo S by a wider margin, meaning that it's already beats the Turbo S on the 0 to 60 and the quarter mile race. So quarter mile, that's pretty good. I mean, quarter mile, it did 10.69. I think I've seen a Model S do 10.69, but I think it was, when they a stripped down Model S. So,
right, they pulled out the seats and stuff.
Yeah. So to 10.6 with a regular production Model S, that'd be quite something.
Yeah, and something else to consider, Porsche's really like trying to meet deliveries, but they're really just starting to deliver now. I don't know when people in the US are going to start getting them. But like by the time everything. Yeah, but early next year is getting close to when the plaid versions of the Model S are going to be coming out.
Yeah.
I wonder if a couple people are thinking, maybe I'll wait for that, because it sounds like the plaid Model S is going to be absurdly fast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to have an extra motor in there, so it should be quite interesting. I mean, it's going to be the first production car, like a high-volume production car, to have three motors, I think, right?
As far as I know. I mean, I know there's four motors in the Croatian...
Rimac?
Yeah, Rimac's got four motors in its concept too, yeah. But that's not any high production thing.
No.
And also Pininfarina one has four motors as well. Also low production number.
All right. Few other updates this week included the Model X. We got information that Tesla communicated to their sales team that the Model X is getting new front seats. So two new front seats that should result in, they should be a little bit less bulky, and they're in production right now. So if you ordered one and it's getting to production over since this week, you're getting the new front seat, and they are less bulky, so resulting in more leg room for the second row seats, and they are getting rear seat pockets.
Exciting.
Yeah. You are a Model X owner, is that like?
That's right.
What did you think of, the leg room in the back in the second row, was it in need of a big improvement?
So our kids are usually in the second row. I get car sick if I'm in the back of a car, so I try not to ever be back there. But we had to put those, I mean, less to the room but more to the pockets. We had to put those like flaps over so the kids can like grab their books or whatever out of the back pocket and kind of store their headphones and stuff in there. So that'll be nice not to have those, because those are really like not great.
Not aesthetically pleasing?
No, not at all. And they don't work really well either. It'll be good. The Model 3, as you know, has seat pockets in the back seat. So you can like, this is another time where the Model X is catching up to the Model 3.
Yeah. Also Model X, like Model S, got a 3 mile range increase. Don't know what to think exactly about that, because when Elon announced that on the calls this week and last week, and it was implemented this week in the advertising, he said it was like, it wasn't certified, right? So it doesn't sound like it's an actual increase in capacity, but more of an increase in just the way they can advertise it, like the EPA rating, just like we discussed with the original Model S long range, which Tesla was always able to advertise at 325, and they did at 310, which we suspected was because they wanted to match the range of the Model S dual motors and performance, which were more expensive and were going to be listed with a shorter range. Drag Times is on the show right now, and they just commented that the best time for the Model S completely OEM was 10.51, actually. So that's impressive. Wow. That's even faster than I thought, actually. I need to see that. I thought that the faster time were all with strip Model S, but 10.5. Then what the hell happened with Top Gear? Then it's even worse than we thought with Top Gear. All right.
Bunch of amateurs.
So yeah, that's just a new advertiser range. If there was an optimate, like Elon did mention an increase, not only an increase in peak power output, but an increase in range with the new motor optimization update that was coming out. So if there's something changing, we're going to see it with that. That will mean more than just changing the advertised rise on the listed Model S and X. We haven't seen that just yet. We just have seen the power increase and some update for Model 3 and Model S. So we'll keep an eye on that. That's more interesting than this. Price of self-driving, the FSD package increased by $1,000. That just happened today. Elon confirmed it earlier this week. And it's interesting because we're starting to get an idea of the take rate of the full self-driving package, which is, of course, controversial for different reasons. Some people say they're never going to be able to deliver it on the current hardware system. Some say that they probably will, but it's going to take years, not... Well, Elon is talking about months now for the future complete version of it. But Tesla says, no, it's coming, and they keep increasing the price that they release new features on it. In this case, that new $1,000 price increase is justified by the new smart summon that came out in the V10. So they figure that that increased the value of the package. Of course, at this point, it's all software. It's all like Tesla working on the software. So the actual hardware it's already installed in the car. So it's important for them, for the gross margin for Tesla, for people to buy it. And what we learned last week with that on that front is that Tesla got $500 to $600 million in unrecognized revenue from the FSD package. What does that mean? Is that since they haven't delivered fully on that feature, they cannot recognize the revenue from it. And well, when I say give us an idea of the take rate, it doesn't give us an exact idea because Tesla sold that package for like $2,000. I think you could actually get it from just $2,000. So $2,000 to now $7,000. But it did say, well, at that time it was up to $6,000. So if you divide that by the 500 to 600 million, it looks like you could be somewhere between 100,000 to 130,000 people that bought a car. I have a Tesla and bought the full self-driving package, which is a decent number in my opinion. Because the number of people that could have bought it could be like closer to 400,000. I think by this point, even probably closer to 500,000. I think I'm talking about people with Autopilot 2.0 and going up.
I think it would be interesting to get those numbers. It's kind of I wonder why Tesla doesn't publish those. I kind of feel like it's lower than they would want it, you know, with the way that they're offering sales and extending price increases.
Yeah.
Or extending the time before price increases. It kind of feels like they want to get more people in there.
Yeah, but it looks like it's working to me. Like if you get 100,000+ people to buy a feature that basically it's hard to say again because of all the things they did. They changed the FSD so many times. At one point, it was literally nothing. You were literally buying nothing. At that point, I don't think that many people bought it. But since they brought some original features that were in the enhanced Autopilot package and they brought it up to the FSD package, I think that now makes more sense for a lot of people to buy it. And now that they also released Smart Summon, though, you could argue that it's not the most useful feature ever. It's still something else that you get from buying the package. But you know that the day that they actually deliver it, and I think they will, I'm not on their timeline that they say, but they will deliver something that it's the whole feature complete thing that's changed everything. So to recognize those revenue, they don't have to convince all the regulators to allow their self-driving system to release because Elon's way to think about it, which is basically what they did with Autopilot, and having to supervise the system, they can do the same thing for city driving. Just the system is running, it's controlling the car, but you're always responsible and you have to take over at any time. So the whole thing that which is called feature complete, they could release that anytime and then recognize those revenue. When I say anytime, I don't mean like literally anytime, but it's easier to do than delivering a system that you can prove is safer than a human driver and you can convince a regulator to do it. That's like a complete different level. So I think Tesla would start recognizing the risk revenue whenever they do deliver those feature complete version of the FSD software. What do we have? The Cyberpunk thing. I thought it was a fun post. It was a kind of a controversial post. Some people didn't like it. Some people thought it made sense. But we figured out, I was looking into some Tesla designers, and I found Sam Jarlafi. And Jarlafi is he's been at Tesla for a few years now, but he's relatively new for the team of designer at Tesla, which is most of them is like the core team, at least, is has been there for a while. Of course, led by Franz von Holzhausen.
Von Holzhausen.
Holzhausen. Okay, you got it. Based on his LinkedIn profile, Jarlafi said he is the lead concept designer, is the lead designer for the concept of the Cybertruck, the Tesla pickup truck. Which in itself doesn't tell you much. I mean, okay, like the guy is in charge of the design of the concept. But then I'll look into his previous design to get an idea of what kind of designer the guy is. And I found this Tesla Model Zero that he designed when he was a student at the Art Center College of Design, but he was also interning at Tesla by then. So I assume that that car is the Tesla Model Zero is like his thesis, the equivalent of a thesis to get your degree or something. And it's interesting for a few things. Okay, first of all, it's not a pickup truck, so let's get out of the way. It's clearly not a pickup truck, but it is extremely futuristic, and that's something that Elon has been talking about for the pickup. And when you look at the front end of the truck, it has that continuous windshield all the way to the front end thing that we think is coming on the pickup truck based on the teaser image that Elon Musk released. So it could give us an idea of what the profile of the front end would look like of the pickup, in my opinion, at least. I thought it was something interesting. A bunch of people were like, hey, are we going to start looking at all the college project of all Tesla designer engineers? No. But this one, I mean, there's such a big mystery around the design of the pickup truck that I think it was worth noting. So you can go check out. We got the images from Sam's website. He took them down after our post, of course. But
did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not fun.
But you're going to go check it out. Check them out on Electric right now.
I think that the high-level thing is the sloping window, which everybody's – you know, it's clearly of what Tesla has talked about, it's clearly the most controversial. And if you look at the teaser image and – Elon later clarified that that was the front of the car because, you know, initially everybody was like, looks like the back of a pickup.
No idea what it was.
Yeah, it's a sloping window and like it's really sloping. And to have the head of that design team have a sloping window that goes straight into a trunk to me is like kind of a big deal. I mean, if you look at that, and I think this has been enhanced, but if you look at the pickup truck teaser on our site, like it's pretty much like window all the way to the light, you know, to the Tesla logo pretty much.
And there's the same little things on the side, like where the line would merge into the side of the car, the profile of the car too. Not as obvious on the profile, but you see it a little bit starting from the side of the headlights, which is very similar again to the concept.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is kind of a big deal. I know when I saw it at first, I was like, oh, this is going to be a big deal. And it wasn't as big as I thought, but like, it kind of like, if you can imagine like that vehicle with a little bit more pointed lines instead of rounded, I think it's kind of close to the front end. Like it kind of seems like it could be.
And of course, one of the top comments is I had to rip my eyeballs out that is ugly.
Of course.
I actually think that it kind of works. If you just look at the front end, I think the front end kind of works. And you're going to need that for a pickup truck, an electric pickup truck that you want to have a decent range and not having a massive battery pack and a massive energy capacity that you're going to need to move that bigger vehicle. Having more efficient aerodynamic performance is going to make a big difference, and it just doesn't exist in the pickup right now. So what I think happened here is that forget about the concept that the Tesla Model 0 for a second, but for the pickup truck, Tesla was looking at a way, all right, we need to make pickup trucks more efficient. And if we do that, we're going to have a completely different pickup design anyway. So if we're going to have to sell a completely different pickup design, well, no matter what, let's get fun with it. Let's have some fun with it. Let's make something that's truly different and not just like, let's try to make a normal pickup that's just way more aerodynamic, because that won't work just by the nature of pickup truck design. It's not aerodynamic at all, the way the modern ones. Well, I say modern ones. I think pickup truck design haven't changed much since like the Ford in the 50s or something like that. But that's just me, maybe.
Yeah, it's pretty square, and they've done some stuff with the front, but it's more like making it less aerodynamic than more aerodynamic. Mm. And like, you don't like you know, from the side, you almost don't know a Ford F-150 from a Chevy Silverado from a Ram anymore. It's just, you know, pickup truck is a pickup truck. Mm-hmm. So this will be like, I mean, if they actually make this thing, you're going to know it. Like, if you see one of these from like 10 miles away, you're going to be able to tell it's a Tesla pickup.
Finger point thing, I think, around them.
Right.
All right. Another interesting thing here, the Tesla Model prototype with potentially larger wheelbase spotted in China. So that's a friend of the show, Jay in Shanghai, that actually spotted that and shared a few pictures of it. He is convinced that it's a longer wheelbase. Some people think the pictures are not as convinced. And I mean, honestly, it's hard to tell from pictures unless you have like a car right next to it, another Model 3 right next to it. But
here's my question, though. Like, why would you just put a regular Model 3 in camo, though?
Exactly. So I have a few issues with those pictures. First off, Tesla has never been known to use that kind of camo in the first place. Like, when they have a prototype, it's just, it's out there and it's driving. So that would be a first here. Of course, it's China, so might be a bit different there. The other thing, too, is that people have the argument that, of course, first of all, let's discuss why a longer wheelbase here. That's not completely unusual for the Chinese market. A lot of premium automakers do that with their sedans, where they will release the same version with just a slightly longer wheelbase, where there will be a roomier second row. And that's because in China, there's a bigger culture for rich people to have drivers, to have chauffeurs, instead of driving themselves around. I mean, it exists other places too, but it's not as big of a deal most places there. Like, rich people still drive themselves in most places. But in China, it's bigger in their culture. So the idea is that automakers will design a vehicle experience around the passenger in the second row instead of the driver's seat. And Tesla did that before, so there's a precedent for it. With the Model S, back in 2015, they offered executive seating option for the Model S. Didn't go very well when they discontinued it pretty quick. So that would be kind of surprising if it comes back in the Model 3 years later. Some people's argument is that Tesla is making the Model 3 in China now, a Gigafactory 3 in China, so why not make it with a different version of the car? Again, I have an issue on that front too, because Tesla did say that they don't plan of making the higher-end version of the Model 3 in China, and I would assume that would be a higher-end version of the car. And
also noted the red calipers on the brakes on that one.
Yeah, that's a Model 3 performance. So not made in Gigafactory 3 for sure. Leading me to think that plus the camo, I mean, it might, if it is indeed a longer wheelbase, might be a tuner, maybe like some company that's going to offer it as an option. They're going to buy the car from Tesla and offer it as a longer, there might be a big enough market in China for that, and they might do it. I don't know. That's just my opinion. What do you think, Seth?
Yeah. I mean, it's well known that, folks in China prefer to ride in the back seat. I don't know how they do it. It would make me car sick, but it's a thing there. And all the other companies make bigger back seats. With and the Model S and the Model X, there's already quite a bit of room in the back, so maybe not as big a priority, but maybe Tesla sees this as an opportunity. I mean, it can't be that hard to extend a car just a little bit longer if you're going to be building it for the home market. So it makes sense to me.
Are you? Can you put a percentage of what you think if Tesla is behind that effort?
I would say 50%.
Yeah, 50. I'm around the same thing. Like, it's not impossible, but and since the car apparently exists, it makes it more likely. But I'm not convinced yet. I'm not 100% convinced.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. I wonder if anybody in the U.S. would want to import one of those for I don't know, limousines or Hertzes or whatever.
Taxi service would be interesting, though.
Yeah, of course, to exactly.
Have like a longer wheelbase. And the Model 3 is starting to be very popular with taxi service. We've been reporting on that for a while. There's a bunch of fleets that are being converted right now. And we just reported this week, too, that the New York Yellow Cab has now just approved the use of a Model 3 as a Yellow Cab, which is Model 3 became the first all-electric vehicle to be approved as a Yellow Cab.
That's fantastic. So I mean,
you can get a medallion for the car now.
Yeah, I think that's huge news. New York City is making a lot of strides with green initiatives. We noted before that they're closing down some streets and bike riding is becoming more of a thing. Noise pollution and exhaust pollution are a big problem. Getting a bunch of electric cabs on the street would be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Staying on Tesla here real quick. We already reported a little bit on that, but that was interesting because the 10Q came out this week after the earnings last week. And Tesla did confirm that they spent $96 million in acquisition other than Maxwell so far this year, so the first 9 months of the year. If you remember, we did report on two other acquisitions in Maxwell this year, which is kind of rare for Tesla to line them up like that. Like, it would be three acquisitions in 2019 when they do like one a year max. We're talking about the iBar System, the little small Canadian engineering company that specializes in making equipment for battery manufacturing. So very interesting one. And AI startup DeepScale that actually Elon Musk ended up confirming it, this one. That was more of an acquire situation. But Tesla never commented on both of those rumors of acquisition, but now they confirm that they did other acquisition than Maxwell, and the price added up to $96 million, including $80 million in cash. So some were in stock, others were in cash. So it doesn't tell us how much they paid for DeepScale, how much they paid for iBar System, but combined it was less than $100 million. So relatively small acquisition. And probably good for iBar System, because iBar System was a decent sized company. I mean, they had a lot of customers. They had a lot of manufacturing facilities and engineering facilities. So if they paid, like, let's say $80 million for it, it's pretty good. And of course, there was the $207 million acquisition of Maxwell, but that was already reported and confirmed because Maxwell was a public company at the time of the acquisition.
What percentage of Maxwell was in stock? I feel like it was like 50-50 or something.
I kind of want to say it was all stock, no? Well, most all stock or something like that.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, I mean, Tesla's stock price has been on a tear lately, so I wonder that's got to be a good timing issue for them, hopefully.
That's a great segue, said, because it was on the tear for a while, less so this week, and the short this week sort of grasped up a few things that they could like hold on to because of the wild ride that was last week and the week before that too. One other thing that they grabbed too was the Tesla being sued for the SolarCity acquisition. So that was, of course, a while back, but this week, all the deposition for Elon Musk and a bunch of other people, including Kimball Musk and everything, went public thanks to PlainSight, which is, of course, questionable. The PlainSight people are like, don't use PlainSight as sources because they are short Tesla. I think that maybe the guy didn't say he was short Tesla. He clearly hates Tesla for like as a big grudge against Tesla, but I'm not sure if he's short or not. But I mean, you publish transcript. I mean, we can use the source him as a source for a transcript, transcript or transcript. I mean, we don't use his analysis of the transcript. We just use the transcript itself. And I dug into the whole thing. I read the whole deposition from Elon Musk. I had the whole deposition from Campbell Musk. We posted the link on Electrek if you want to read it too. But my conclusion, if you want my opinion on this whole thing, yes, there was clear conflict of interest between when during the acquisition, and probably could have been handled better where Elon and Kimball and a few other board members could have recused themselves during the, some of the process. Maybe that would have been more by the book. However, I don't think it was anything malicious about it. I think they generally think that Tesla and SolarCity should be just one company, and the, there's many synergy and that could improve, make a better company out of it. The problem was that they did that, and of course, SolarCity they did provide the bridge loans to SolarCity, so that looked bad because the bridge loan came from Elon Musk and Lyndon Rive and Peter Rive, who were Elon's cousins and happens to be the co-founders of SolarCity. And they paid, Tesla paid them back the bridge loan pretty quick after the acquisition. So that looked bad. The fact that they needed a bridge loan and it was seen as a bailout from Tesla, that looked bad on itself. And the fact that the solar business, since it moved to Tesla, has been on the downhill ever since. So that also looked bad, though it did came, it did improve last quarter, and with the solar roof now too, and Tesla focusing now on solar installation, I think it's going to finally turn around. But from the investors' lawsuits perspective, they see this as a as the main issue. Like they see it as SolarCity was a failing business that Elon Musk was a big shareholder of, and other people involved at Tesla and on the board of Tesla was involved of. So they needed to bail it out in order to save their own investment. To a degree, that's probably true to a certain degree, but I think the main thing they saw a big advantage of having the energy generation side being included in the company, which is an energy consumption with involved electric vehicle, the consume energy, and they want to match it with energy generation. That makes a ton of sense. And on long term, I think it will continue to make sense, and it will become more obvious for everyone why Tesla and SolarCity are combined. And I think that's better for everyone. So at the end of the day, I didn't see anything awful in it. And reading the transcript, I also didn't see anything really, really bad in it. However, I did see a few funny things, which we posted on Electrek. As you can imagine, Elon doesn't suffer lawyers extremely well, and he managed to rile that one up pretty good. The lawyer for the shareholders, of course. At one point, Elon even had to tell the guy to chill down because the lawyer was apparently yelling at him because Elon didn't want to answer why he knew basic finance. He thought it was like asking him how he knew that gravity went down, and he kept responding with a variation of that answer for a while. I thought that was funny. Also, he did mention that when another interesting part was the lawyer mentioned that the Evercore bankers, we were overseeing the acquisition of SolarCity, that when Elon mentioned that he wanted to move the solar roof on V-Link forward, the lawyer, the bankers wrote in an email that it's Elon's world. We just live in it. And Elon told the lawyer that he wanted to correct that statement. He said, that's not true. It's not Elon's world. It's Wayne's world. And even though the him and the lawyer were kind of getting at it each other, the lawyer did respond party on guard, so he did at least get the reference and was not upset that Elon wanted to correct Evercore banker. So I thought that was funny. But yeah, again, it was the big short stories this week, and I think it's mostly nothing. All right, the Mini Cooper. They did release the price in the US this week. So we've been kind of bashing the car since it came in because we are at Electrek. We are pretty old school all electric fans, and we remember the days of the Mini E program. We even have one of our riders, Jameson Dow, who was a member of the Mini E program. I mean, he was one of the testers for the Mini E program. So that was a decade ago at this point. And the Mini E became the BMW i3. which from 2013 to now, and I was just driving. I'm in Barcelona right now, and I rented a BMW i3 at the airport. Hasn't changed much in the last 6 years or so, the BMW i3. And BMW decided to launch the Mini Cooper Electric based on the BMW i3 prototype. So we feel like the vehicle didn't evolve much over the last decade of the Mini program. So that's why we were mainly bashing. And by that, we mean that it has the older 32 kilowatt hour battery pack in it, gives us about 150 miles of range WLTP. Which is not bad, but still 50 kilowatt DC charging. That's not for a car coming out in 2020. That's not good. But it's still decent. And if you can get a good price out of it, then you have a valuable product there. Back when they announced they unveiled the car that was earlier this year, they announced the price in Germany was like 34,000 euros or something like that. Nothing too attractive. This week they released the price in the US. It's coming in March 2020 in the US. You can get it. 29,900 before incentive. 30,000.
That's pretty good.
That's decent. Yeah, that's pretty good, especially if you consider BMW still has about. Good question there.
Is Mini part of BMW?
Is Mini part enough of BMW that there's a federal incentive count toward the 200,000 delivery mark? I'm sure that BMW is nowhere close to the 200,000, though. Well, it must be getting up there, though, with the i3 being so. But the i3 is like.
They don't sell a lot of i3s. Do you get any incentive on the plug-in, like the 330Es?
Yeah, I think they do count. It's not as big, but I think they might still count.
Okay. I mean, you know, look, whatever. For $30,000, it's a fun car. It's a car that's designed well. Like, people who don't really care about specs will see this and be like, I like that car. It's pretty. And, you know, I think a lot of people are going to buy that rather than, you know, with a car with a little bit faster charging or a little bit more range, and a $10,000 more expensive price tag. So maybe they made the right decisions here. I don't know. I'm bummed about it. Like, I kind of feel like Mini could have done a little bit more in the 10 years since. I mean, I think the battery pack is actually smaller than the battery pack from 10 years ago. So obviously I feel like they could have done more, but, you know, given all these things and this pretty low price, that's going to put it kind of equal to the regular Mini. Maybe they made the right decisions there. I don't know.
Yeah, after incentive, you can get that thing down to $20,000, just under $20,000. So
yeah, I mean, if you live in California, $20,000 for an electric Mini is pretty kind of.
I'm sure they're gonna get some good leases on that too, some good lease right. price. So if you want, I wouldn't buy that car, but if I'm down in California, I might look at leasing it, because it's not as good looking as the gas Mini though. Like, I think
they did some weird things.
They went a little bit too far with those wheels. Like, nah, like, it doesn't work. And the front end tool, it's not the perfect implementation of the fake front grill thing. I mean, I get it's hard getting the front grill right. I mean, not a lot of companies have done it right, but they're close to it. I think it's just there's something off. Maybe it's just the wheel. Maybe the wheel are like. Bothering me so much that the rest of the design is I'm not on board with it.
What about the Union Jack rear taillights?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
I mean, that's not too out of place for a Mini Cooper, I think.
Yeah. Our copy editor and writer, Michelle, was super into it. And, you know, she's in Florida, so... I feel like it's going to do well. I mean, not blockbuster well, but, you know, if they make an effort, I think they'll sell a few of these.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not as bonkers as the i3 in terms of design.
Let's see how many they make too, because
right.
I was just disappointed about the powertrain being based on the i3 just for the fact that it's like kind of old technology. They are coming up with their fifth generation technology next year with the iX3. And it's a big step change. It's equivalent to, we've talked a lot about the MEB of Volkswagen. It's equivalent to the e-Golf to the MEB.
Right.
i3 to fifth generation technology EV for BMW. So that thing just comes out. So it's like Volkswagen coming out with an electric Passat based on the e-Golf powertrain. You're like, what happened?
Right.
Why are you doing that a few months before you launch the MEB?
I guess my biggest complaint wouldn't be its current form. It would be that they should have released this 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Just like we complained, like the Nissan not following up the Leaf,
right.
BMW not following up the i3. There's some weird shenanigans going on now, but we're going to start talking about that soon, I think, with 2021. There's going to be so many other EVs coming up on the market that they're going to make us forget about those shortcomings of the early adoption of electric vehicles.
Yeah. One I'm particularly excited about is the, what Ford's going to announce at the LA Auto Show. They've been kind of teasing like a Mustang.
Yeah.
Related.
Mach-E. Do we know that's the Mach-E right now? It's been the rumors for a while now, but like we keep calling it the Mach-E.
Yeah. Nothing's confirmed obviously, but, it seems like everybody thinks Mach-E is the way to go. And you know, the Mustang tag on there would be a big deal for Ford people.
We posted some renderings that came out yesterday that looks like it's probably close to what we expect production will be, because they were based on CAD renderings
that
leaked. And looks cool. Looks very close to a Mustang with that slight crossover form factor, but very very slight. Kind of remind me a bit of the Polestar 2 form factor and aggressive look,
mm-hmm.
but a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit bigger trunk. So yeah, we are excited for that. There's a lot of things coming out. There's a new Volkswagen ID concept coming out in LA. There's BMW has a thing too. Do they? I think they have a thing too coming in LA.
Yeah, they're going to have some announcement, but I'm a little bit worried that it's just going to be another prototype. Yeah, so by the way, you're in Europe and Micah's in, he's in Europe at the motorcycle show in Israel. But
in Milan.
Yeah, we're going to have four people. Jamie, myself, new to electric, Brad Berman, whose first post just went up today. If you're in the electric car scene, you probably know him from other places.
Hybridcars.com.
We're excited.
For the old school EV people, if you remember, hybridscar.com. I mean, he hasn't been affiliated with the site forever, but he started that.
Yeah, so we're excited to have him. And also Mikey is going to cover some mobility stuff there. So we're going to be four people deep. And the LA Auto Show is going to be kind of exciting. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, I'm missing that. I'm going to be crying in Paris.
Yeah, poor Fred.
Yeah, I'm not moving though. I'm always in LA too. I spend most of the year in LA. I just said I haven't timed it right this year for the November of the show. So that's 3 weeks from now. It's coming up 3 weeks from now, right?
I mean, 2 weeks really is the all the announcements will be like kind of around the 14th. So
yeah, we're 2 weeks like a day to a day or two before the actual press events and things. Press days, I should say. Press days, and then it's the public doing the show. That's pretty much it for us this week, everyone. So keep an eye out for that, because November is going to be a big month for us. A lot of announcements. So we'll talk to you soon next week. Ciao.